Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, and welcome to the listener. We're starting with Leanne Harher and the monthly Story County Report. Hi, Leanne. Thanks for being with us today and to bring us up to date.
Hello, Leanne.
Well, I'm going to start out with some news from Planning and Development from Story County. They are excited to announce that on tentatively on August 3rd, so in just a couple short weeks, they'll be going live with implementing CitizenServe. It's an online zoning permitting system that they've been working on for quite a while. It allows general public to easily apply, track, and pay for zoning permits all online. This was an initiative that started about a year ago through budget time. Pardon me, and it's now ready to go live. It simplifies the permit application, reviewing, approving, and issuance, and even the inspection processes. Development cases, such as subdivisions and conditional use permits, and other related applications will be added in the future. But first of all, they're starting with zoning permits. If you have questions or you want further information about CitizenServe, you can contact the Story County Planning and Development staff at 515-382-7245 or email them at pzweb@storycountyiowa.gov or go to their website under storycountyiowa.gov. Again, look for Planning and Development. They do also want me to share that we'd like to have people encourage people to take time to respond to the 2020 census if you have not. Story County self-enumeration rate is currently at 67.5%. We'd love to get that bumped up. Response to the U.S. Census helps direct billions of dollars in federal funds to all local communities. This helps with healthcare, emergency response, schools, educational programs, roads, and various other public services. Also, results from the 2020 census determines the number of seats each state has in Congress and how your political representation is determined at all levels of government. So census takers are starting to follow up with non-responding households. That started July 16th. They began interviewing households that have not yet responded to the census in many regions managed by area census offices. The majority of the census offices across the country will begin follow-up work on August 11th, and they will conclude work no later than October 31st. They will be following all local public health guidelines when they visit individual households and are within your neighborhood. If you would rather a person not visit you from the U.S. Census, go ahead and respond to that 2020 census. You can, again, go to the link that you may have received in the mail. You can also go by phone. Again, everyone that was living with you on April 1st, 2020, should be listed on the 2020 census. There's an image of the questionnaire and more information on the U.S. Census webpage, which we have linked, I believe, to on the county's website. You can call 1-844-330-2020, and you can also find different languages as well in order to complete the census. A last note from Story County Planning and Development. There's an adjustment underway to the agricultural exemption review process. This was needed following the passage of House File 2512, which was signed by the governor and put into action. The Planning and Development Department is now supporting voluntary application submittal process for property owners claiming their land and or building and or structure and those projects associated with those are agriculturally exempt from county zoning requirements. Voluntary submittal includes a county's zoning permit application, agricultural exemption application, site plan sketch that shows location setbacks, the proposed building and or structure. In addition to reviewing details of the proposed agricultural exempt building or structure project, Planning and Development Department's review will continue to include referral to Story County Environmental Health staff when wastewater is planned to be generated and a septic system permit is needed. Also, for reviewing the impact on the floodplain, referring applicants to electric service providers regarding overhead electrical wiring and potential impacts to easements. There's a link on Story County's website under applications and permits, or applications and forms, or you can call the Planning and Development Department. Again, that number is 515-382-7245 with any additional questions or concerns. A note from the Treasurer's Office with Story County. The Treasurer's Office is conducting all of its normal business through the phone and email and can be reached a couple different ways, treasurer@storycountyiowa.gov, or by calling 515-382-7330. Again, that phone number is 515-382-7330. Treasurer Ted Rasmussen would like to note that even though they are not open to the public, they are doing all possible business of the office through phone and email. And that does include exchanging your plates for specialty plates like blackout plates. So again, anyone with questions, call the Treasurer's Office at 515-382-7330. Or there's more information on our website too, which is storycountyiowa.gov. A similar note from Brett McLean, the Director of Story County Veterans Affairs. He is continuing to meet with veterans and surviving spouses and wants to share that Veterans Affairs is open for business but closed to public at this time. So again, he is doing appointments via phone and email. We have a number of openings for various boards and commissions in Story County. ASSET, which is the stands for Analysis of Social Services Evaluation Team, has one opening. I do want to note that ASSET policies require any county volunteers to be residents of Story County. The Board of Health has two openings. The Story County Conservation Board has one opening. And then last, the Commission of Veterans Affairs has two openings. And with that commission, applicants should contain the DD-214 with personal information redacted. The deadline to apply for all four of these boards and commissions is September 30th at 4:30 p.m. The Board of Supervisors does seek gender balance in all boards and commissions and would like to encourage citizens who may be interested in serving on a board or commission to complete an application that is also kept on file. The application is on our website under boards and commissions. As always, you could email me as well, and I can send it to you if you're interested in serving on a board or commission. So you can reach us a variety of different ways. You can sign up for Notify Me. If you go to our county's website, there's a link to that. You can email me directly, lharter@storycountyiowa.gov, or you can call me at 515-382-7247. An update on county services, we remain closed. Our buildings primarily remain closed to the public, except for those at the Justice Center. The courts and clerk and court are open at the Justice Center in Nevada. The jail and sheriff's office, however, remains closed to the public. We are continually reviewing our benchmarks that the Board of Supervisors established on each Wednesday morning at our KUPCOG management team, which stands for Continuity of Government, Continuity of Operations. The team members discuss those benchmarks and the steps we need to take towards reopening at a point in time. I do not have that point in time to share with you yet today. I can share that yesterday at the Board of Supervisors meeting, they approved the county's information technology director to look at some appointment software so that we potentially do a soft opening via appointments. That is what many counties and jurisdictions throughout Iowa have done. And what you're seeing now is a lot of the cities that did open are now closing again while the virus continues its spread. So I'll be glad to answer any questions. But again, Story County's website is www.storycountyiowa.gov. And I certainly appreciate being able to come in once a month and be able to provide an update. And that's what I have.
Thank you so much, Leanne.
You are welcome.
Looks like you've been keeping track of a lot of activity.
It has been. It's been a busy time. I do want to note that everyone should watch their mailbox in August. We'll be doing our countywide newsletter that goes out in the Sun. We did delay publication of that slightly so that we could have some additional information to share. And again, check our website. We're really trying to keep that as current, and all the different offices and departments are striving hard to respond to any service needs from our citizens.
Thank you so much, Leanne.
Thank you. I hope everyone stays healthy and has a great rest of the week.
Hope you do too. And bringing us on to one of the big stories of the week is the plans to prepare to send kids back to school. I heard that was the story we were going to present today, Susan.
I guess that we're going to be talking about changed plans for the rest of the show, because our original plan for today, since all the school districts had presented these plans, they were suggested to have three alternatives: hybrid on-site learning in the school, hybrid learning on-site and off-site, and learn at home online learning. They were taking it very seriously. Some sent out surveys to their parents to find out what they wanted. And I read in the Tri-County Times about a meeting at the Ballard Middle School Gymnasium to discuss a district-wide survey that had an astounding 95% completion rate. So people really cared about this. 70% chose on-site learning when schools open in September. 20% chose the composite, and just 10% chose completely online. Two Ballard residents gave passionate speeches to the board against the requirement of masks. Many school districts has had similar processes for learning the preference of parents. So our original plan was to interview six superintendents from our listening area.
Well, that sounds interesting. I'll bet the schools in our listening area had different approaches to reopening. I thought you had called one of the superintendents, didn't you?
Oh, I called all the superintendents, but only two of them returned my calls, and we had trouble getting a recording time set up. So I would like to acknowledge the helpful conversations I had with two new superintendents. It was only the new superintendents who responded at all. Julie Treppa at the Boone Community School District and Matt Patton at Roland Story. But even they were very busy on Zoom calls with all the other superintendents trying to decide how to respond to the proclamation Governor Reynolds made last Friday.
And can you remind us what that was?
For such a bombshell, it wasn't very long. I can read it. Although her press conference with other people was also an hour long. I was not able to record that. I direct all state agencies, this is from Governor Reynolds, school districts and other local government bodies and agencies shall take all efforts to prepare to safely welcome back students and teachers to school in person this fall. These efforts shall also ensure that schools have the flexibility to continue providing education remotely if it becomes necessary, and that parents have the option to select a learning model for their children that best meets the needs of their family. But the best interests of students and families requires that our students are prepared to provide a structured, safe, enriching academic environment. School districts that would like to do more than 50% of teaching remotely will have to obtain a waiver based on public health reasons.
So what was so upsetting about what the governor said?
Well, I think it was the 50% on-site requirement that caused the problem. Most of the hybrid learning involved getting more social distance by having students have 2 days on and 2 days off. This is, you'd have just half of the students in the school at each time. So they could have the advantage of meeting face-to-face as well as the extra information they'd get from online instruction. In addition, the governor didn't encourage wearing masks. And since children tend to be asymptomatic even when they have COVID-19, the solution of having parents keep them home when they feel sick really can't stop it from spreading to teachers and families of their classmates if they don't wear face coverings. Here's the governor's directive on face coverings. Requiring face coverings for all staff and students is not recommended, the guidance said, noting that schools should allow staff and students to use personal face coverings if they choose. Students should be taught not to criticize the use or non-use of facial coverings, according to the guidance.
Where did you get all this information?
I got that information from the Iowa State Education Association, the teachers' union. They were not reluctant to criticize Governor Reynolds.
I have a short segment recorded with the president, Mike Baranek, and infectious disease physician, Dr. Megan
Cironovich.
I'll play it for you.
If there is one thing we do know in our COVID-19 world is that this virus has focused us to change the way we look at everything. Where we thought we knew how to handle everyday, ordinary tasks, such as entering a school building, lining up for lunch, and handing out class assignments, this pandemic has changed the way we do our business. The ISEA believes all school safety plans need to include safety measures such as staff and students wearing face coverings throughout the day in accordance with CDC recommendations, teaching proper hand washing, rearranging furniture to ensure it is properly spaced, installing floor markings and signage to help maintain physical distancing while navigating the school, designating a single point of entry and exit, and instituting procedures for screening and monitoring students and staff for symptoms on entry to school, among many, many other measures. Which is why the Department of Ed and the Department of Health's reopening guidance was so irresponsible. Iowa schools have been working on their return to learn plans for months. In many places, educators have been involved in various aspects of those plans, which makes the staff more confident in returning to school. So when the DOE and the DPH released ambiguous and contradictory guidance, which have made the potential to derail the progress of return to learn plans, we were frustrated and angry on behalf of the students and staff who were affected. What is needed right now is definitive leadership and guidance. We do not need leadership telling us what we may want to, or this might help. With no clear direction at the federal level or state mandated guidelines, our school districts are looking for clear guidance based in science and health. That should not be hard. Face coverings, physical distancing, and frequent hand washing helps to save lives. I'd like to make one last point. Educators are a creative bunch. We are accustomed to working with exceptions to the rule. So when the DOE and the DPH base their policies on the exceptions, those students who may have difficulties wearing masks, of all the professions in the world able to hand these exceptions with grace and professionalism, you can count on educators. It's what we do every day. We can help the students who need to eat a snack every 15 minutes to help their blood sugar be at appropriate levels. We can guide the students who cannot sit in classrooms with loud noises. And we can make the accommodations for students who do not like bright lights. It's our joy and it's our jobs to address the myriad of issues and personalities who walk through the doors of our public schools each day. It's insulting to write paragraphs to us about stigmatizing students for wearing or not wearing a mask. Imagine if we had clear guidance, sound science, and health policy from our leaders so that our return to school this fall, we could address the underlying damage in this pandemic, which is the emotional and mental toll it has taken on our students and the inequities that our students live and endure. If we do not need to continue to fight for our safe return, educators could get back to focusing on building our students up and helping with their emotional and mental well-being and helping them to learn and grow. Our public schools are at the heart of our communities. That heart has been torn in two with school closings. Let's get it right. Let us give everyone back healthy and safe to school, both physically and emotionally. We need to be unequivocal with this. We demand nothing less. Now I would like to turn it over to Dr. Cyranovich.
Thank you so much, Mike. As you highlighted there, our educators just want to do what's best for our students. So it's our responsibility as a society to arm them and prepare them so that way our opening of schools can be as successful as we possibly can prepare them to be. COVID is a deadly disease. As much as we wish it wasn't here, unfortunately, it's present in Iowa, and it's increasing in its trajectory as we speak. Kids are less likely to get COVID. They're also less likely to get the severe implications of COVID that we see, but they're still at risk, especially those with underlying issues like asthma, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, amongst so many other issues that our kids do face that go into school every day. And we have to keep these things in mind. Kids are not immune. Iowa is not immune. And thus it's so important that we take the right precautions now. And on top of that, our staff. We have to protect our staff at our schools, because without the staff, without the educators, there's no way we can have a successful school program or school year. As we can see through all the studies that we've looked at so far, and the CDC has directly stated, being in a confined indoor space, like a school classroom, is one of the highest risk situations for transmission, because there's no way for that ventilation to clear any droplets that might be carrying the virus in an easy format. Thus, indoor spaces where our kids are sitting and learning are going to be high risk, especially if we're not taking precautions that we can, such as face coverings. Recently, we've had several reviews that have looked at different preventative ways in which we can stop transmission or at least minimize it. And one of the biggest things that we have seen is that face coverings combined with eye protection and social distancing, all three of those things together are the best way to truly reduce transmission. And that is the mantra that we need to approach as we open our schools to try to give it the best launch we can. And when we talk about face coverings, it doesn't necessarily have to be a mask. It can be a face shield. In fact, face shields provide that extra eye protection, are non-porous, so it protects both the wearer in a better fashion as well as those around the wearer. And it also is more comfortable. We've often seen that in other countries, face shields have been adapted by schools successfully. And you can do it in a fun way. Several places have said, hey, we can make these in style such as you're a superhero. You can make this fashionable for children to want to wear. It's not about getting it perfect. Sure, children might touch their face under their face shield. They might remove their face shield from time to time. It's not about getting it perfect. It's about teaching them how to do it. Because even wearing that face covering for part of the time can greatly reduce transmission and increase the likelihood that our kids can stay in school. So it's about working together to try to ensure that we have those right steps in place from the beginning and that we're all giving the same messaging.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Gina McAndrews and I, Susan Franzen, are your hosts for today, and we've been talking about the plans to reopen schools at the end of August in accord with the proclamation by Governor Kim Reynolds. We close this segment with statements from the press conference of the Iowa State Education Association. And before we continue, I'd like to comment a little on some of the questions that I asked Superintendent Patton over at Roland Story. One had to do with funding, because obviously this is going to require a lot more cleaning and staff. And he said that that part of it, the cleaning and the staff, they'll get money for cleaning supplies and so forth from the CARES Act. But the bigger funding problem will probably be substitute teachers. Because it's quite likely that teachers will have to be out, and substitutes are always hard to get. So that's just going to be an ongoing headache, I think.
And he did say, when I asked, what about parents who don't want to send their children back? Is homeschooling still an option? And he said, oh, yes, it's still an option, and there's supports for homeschoolers. But, of course, these are
parents who are only homeschooling because they fear that returning to the classroom won't be safe for their children.
So there's a lot more to talk about there, but we do not have
any administrators who will be facing these problems.
And I don't think that the superintendents could have talked very openly about their concerns, because basically they have to put a good face on what they have to do.
I think it's time for a music break as we change the subject from going back to school to remembering some of the enjoyable activities of summers past and present.
I see that the Her Story City Carousel is opening, and it has a new addition. I think its person to tell us about that is Jay Wilson, who's the director of the Story City Greater Chamber Connection. And I know that Jay is with us. Hello, Jay.
Good morning, Gina. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Great.
Are you staying safe and healthy?
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to a great weekend at the carousel. Fortunately, back in May, Governor Reynolds released the requirements for parks to open, so we could open our carousel according to CDC guidelines and Governor Reynolds' recommendations. So we looked at our process and figured that there's a way we can make this happen. And with our carousel, it was, I say, easier than some other carousels. We talked a lot to other carousels across the country and what they were doing and what they were planning and if they could open. But with our animals, if we alternated every other animal, it's exactly 6.5 feet distance from across from each other, so we can social distance correctly with our animals. So you'll see signs on our animals if you come to see us that the animal is resting. So those are not available to ride. We can put 14 people on per ride, which is pretty good. That's about 50% of our capacity anyway.
Wow.
Right. So we were excited that, we found a cleaner that will kill germs almost immediately on contact. It requires us to clean between rides. So we ask all the riders to step off while we clean all the animals and they can get back on again.
That's terrific. So when will the carousel be open?
Well, July 2nd was our first opening day, and we've been open limited hours and days this year because of the extra processes and cleaning requirements that we go through daily. So Thursdays and Fridays we're open right now from 10 till noon, and then we reopen again those 2 days from 3 to 5. Saturdays and Sundays have only been 1 to 4 each day. And these were, of course, like I said, half of what we're open normally. So this is our third week, and just getting a feel for how people are coming to visit and when they're coming to visit. Hours might change on a weekly basis, so we always encourage everybody to go out to our Facebook page and check our hours for the week beginning on Monday. We always post those. We also have a signpost at the carousel as well and on our website.
Have you been pretty busy?
We have been. Of course, you said it is summer and heat has come out and humidity, and it's been hot lately. So we've been busier most of the mornings than the afternoons. And of course, last Saturday when it was 110, I believe, with heat index, we, of course, had to close because it's far too hot there. Our policy is to close after it reaches 101, so...
Can you tell us a little bit more about the carousel and what's so special about it?
Oh my gosh, there's so many special things. I don't think we have enough time. I will say that it's an original 1913 Herschel Spielman carousel. It was built as a traveling carousel. So even though right now it sits in our park permanently, back in 1913, it traveled from community to community. And we were the one communities that were lucky enough to have it come visit us on specific days. And there was a conflict back in 1938 where we wanted it for 4th of July. It wasn't available. Another community had booked it, and it was some confusion on whose year it was. So we made the owner of the carousel an offer and to purchase it. So he said, that's fine. If you can raise the money in 24 hours, it's yours. So we actually had a special where we ran the carousel for 24 hours straight, raised $2,000 at 10 cents per ride, minus $200. We were $200 short, but that was close enough. And the $200 was kicked in by some other business owners. So it became ours in 1938 and has been a part of a greater part of Story City ever since.
Wow. Generally, when there's no virus around, what times of the year is it open?
Generally, we open Memorial Day weekend, and then we run through Labor Day weekend. After school starts August 15th, we go to weekends only, which we don't know what that's going to look like this year either. We're still kind of debating that and when we'll be open. with schools opening, not necessarily later, but a little bit later.
I heard the Swinging Bridge might be opening.
Or that the Swinging Bridge is open. Yes, it was damaged back in the spring and of last year. And we had a great crew come in and get us all repaired and looking like 1936 when it was first built. So, nope, our Swinging Bridge is back open. Our parks are open. We do have a great park system. So our carousel is nestled in the North Park, which have a couple new bridges that have been redone with lights. So a nice evening to walk through the park with lit bridges is very pretty, and plenty of playground equipment for the kids during the day and all kinds of things to do. So come see us at the carousel and visit all those different things.
And can you remind folks where the Swinging Bridge is in case they don't know?
Right. So the Swinging Bridge is in the North Park. So as you come into town in Story City on Broad Street, to the north, you'll see the North Park. To the south, you'll see the South Park. And the Swinging Bridge is kind of hidden, maybe a little bit by trees. So you'll see a drive there just before the football field, turn in there, and you'll almost run right into it.
All right.
But it's very nice over there, too. That South Park has a fire pit along the river that you can sit out and have a fire. Not in a 110-degree day, but, you know, I don't know, it was one of those nice evenings.
Yeah, I hear you. How about the duck races? Are they going to be able to have the duck races?
Unfortunately, we had to cancel the duck race for this year. That's something that the GCC has been looking at and trying to adapt some of our events to still make them safe. And it was very hard to do. And a lot of our events, of course, focused on large gatherings, so not really conducive to social distancing. That's why we're excited to have the carousel up and running, because we thought, okay, this is the way we can provide smiles. At least we can get this done.
Can you tell us a little bit about the duck races and how those got started?
Oh my gosh, I can't remember how those got started. But so what the duck race is anybody can sponsor a duck, buy a duck. It's $5 per duck. And it's a race. So we dump the ducks in the Skunk River and let them race down the river and kind of direct them into a channel towards the end just before the dam and pull them out one at a time. So first duck to cross the race, of course, is the winner. And everyone's assigned a duck number. So we look at the bottom of the duck, and we have numerous prizes that businesses donate. You know, usually $1,000 prize we have every year that's donated from a local business. So,
excuse me, I'd like to break in here. We had hoped to have Paul Wearson on to talk about the duck races with you. For those who might be totally new to this concept, we should stress these are rubber duckies.
Right. Yes. Not real ducks.
We don't. Yeah. I didn't hear that.
We don't paint the ducks with numbers. No.
I didn't hear that, and I thought people might think, "My gosh, what are we doing with the ducks?"
Right. Yeah. And we don't. They're all rubber duckies.
It's really kind of a madhouse because there can be hundreds. Right? You have hundreds of ducks. Oh, sometimes?
Thousands. Usually thousands.
Wow. And thousands of rubber duckies. Yes.
Well, we have up to 3,000 numbered. And, you know, average is usually we use around 1,000, maybe a little over.
And they're big cash prizes. And
right.
Yeah. And Paul loves to tell the story about that people donate things too. So
right.
You get like a silver tea set. And once when there was a high school boy who won the silver tea set. And he was so embarrassed.
Yeah, there are some different prizes that some people end up with. But again, we've got a lot of great businesses that help support that. And we end up with over 100 prizes that we give away. So, you know, odds of winning are about 101.
Wow, well, that's pretty darn good. When do they usually hold it?
June is usually our time. Shortly after Scandinavian Days, a couple weeks. So I know last year when we had the duck race, because the river had flooded and we were having trouble with all the flooding, we decided to have it on Broad Street in downtown Story City. And we had the Story City Fire Department come out and they put up a big tank, and we loaded all the ducks in the tank and just kind of dropped the edge of the tank, and they went along the curb and raced down the street. It was hilarious. It was so funny, and it was so fast that I remember when we first did a test for it, I couldn't even keep up with the ducks because they'd just gone so fast down the end of the street. I couldn't keep them. Like, make sure they don't go down the gutter.
Oh my goodness.
So that was definitely an interesting twist to it. So, you know, I believe we've considered that we'll just keep having it on Broad Street and not have to deal with the river anymore. I mean, everyone loved it. I mean, all the spectators were kind of standing along the sidewalk, just, you know, watching the ducks go right by them. So it was, and everybody was cheering. It was hilarious.
Well, Story City, certainly.
I imagine it's quite a spectacle for the live ducks, too, that passing by.
Right. And we do have a lot of those, too.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Jay, to tell us great Story City stories.
Right. And I have to say, too, this weekend is a special weekend for the carousel because it is Saturday's National Carousel Day.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, right. It's always a good full day of activities for us, but we are limiting those to just keeping the carousel open, and our hours are, again, going to vary. We'll be open from 9 to 11, 1 to 3, and then 5 to 7 that day, just to give staff time to clean in between and some breaks.
Because we have a nationally recognized carousel, correct?
Correct. Yes, we're on the National Carousel Association. Yeah, it's always a good time to come celebrate and ride on National Carousel Day, and we look forward to seeing a lot of, I won't say smiling faces, but we can't see them through the face mask, but we can see the smiling eyes.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jay.
Thanks for having me on today.
All right. We'll be up and ride carousel.
Excellent. Well, I'll be there waiting for you.
It's one of Susan's favorite rides.
Yeah, I was there many years ago with all six of my granddaughters.
And, oh, right.
Yes.
Yep. Grandkids, everybody, all ages, yeah. Everyone loves the carousel.
And never riding, too old. Yeah, riding the roosters. And
right.
Those animals are really, really wonderful.
Yes, yes. Thanks again for having me on today.
You're welcome.
Oh, rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Bo, bo, bo-dee-o. Rubber ducky, joy of joys. When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend, it's true. Oh, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fella who's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-a-dub-dubby, rubber ducky, you're so fine, and I'm lucky that you're mine. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Hey, rubber ducky, would you like me to scrub your back with my nifty little scrub brush? You would? Okay, how's this? Hey, you want me to scrub behind your ears? Ooh, I see. You don't have any ears, do you? Well, how about your tummy? Scrub his little ducky tummy. Ooh, he's ticklish. Ooh. Oh, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fella who's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-a-dub-dubby, rubber ducky, you're so fine, and I'm lucky that you're mine. Rubber ducky, I'd like a whole pond of. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've been talking with Jay Wilson, director of the Story City Greater Chamber Connection, about some of the things that have been happening in Story City this summer. But even when we have to keep our distance from people, it's a lovely time to be out in nature. And
it's time for a phonology. I think we have one.
Yes, we have a lovely one about hummingbirds. Let's take a listen.
Phonology is recording nature's happenings when they occur, the first prairie flower of spring or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's phonology is about Iowa's hummingbirds. Hummingbirds are some of the most distinctive birds to see in Iowa, if your eyes can keep up. Known for their extremely speedy flight and abrupt stops, these winged gems are fun to spot and easy to attract to your yard or apartment windowsill with a feeder. Outdoor-loving individuals enjoy providing a mixture of sugar water to feeders specifically designed for hummingbirds. They can be purchased where bird feeders are sold. While Iowa most certainly has hummingbirds, there's debate as to how many species frequent the state from year to year. Part of the difficulty is getting the birds to sit still for a photo. And another part is that four of the five species ever documented in Iowa are exceedingly rare. The second most common, the rufous-sided hummingbird, has only been documented 14 times, and you could count the sightings of the least common three on one hand. But it's the ruby-throated hummingbirds, however, are common across all 99 counties, and more than 80% of the estimated 20 million ruby-throated hummingbirds in the world spend time in the U.S. every year. The ruby-throated hummingbird is a distinctively festive coloration and can be seen all summer. Both males and females are mostly iridescent emerald, with a patch on their chest and chin that's red in males and white or gray in the females. The fancy word for this patch is the gorget, as it looks similar to the armor plates that are covered the throats of medieval military personnel. Hummingbirds like food they can spot, and with eyes that can see into the ultraviolet spectrum, they can spot a lot. Ruby-throated hummingbirds prefer visiting red and orange flower, like our cannas and trumpet vines. For artificial feeders, the color of the feeder itself attracts the hummingbirds. Adding food dye to the sugar water in your feeder won't significantly impact the feeder's overall attractiveness to hummingbirds, so you can skip adding the food dye. Hummingbirds also supplement their nectar diet with protein and fat from insects. These birds commonly steal meals out of spider webs and prey on insects caught in tree sap. Hummingbird meals have been analyzed to contain gnats, beetles, aphids, spiders, mosquitoes, ants, and even bees, although those the birds eat tend to be exceedingly small. So if you see a hummingbird darting around an area, apparently doing nothing, it's likely eating insects too small for you to see. Hummingbirds like swifts are classified as apitiformes, literally meaning without feet. This is due to their very short legs and habit of tucking their feet in close to the body during flight. Hummingbirds' legs are so short that they are not capable of hopping or walking, although they can manage a shuffle and can scratch their heads with some acrobatics. Hummingbirds also lack down feathers, which would weigh them down and create more drag in flight. Unfortunately, this makes them more susceptible to weather changes, as they can't trap warm air around their bodies without the down. So the hummingbirds, instead of shivering, goes into a torpid state to conserve energy. In this state, the bird's body temperature plummets and its heartbeat can drop from as many as 1,200 beats per minute to just 50. This allows the hummingbird to survive freezing nights and warm up in the morning from sunlight. Artificial feeders can also be crucial in cold weather survival, but only if the sugar water in them doesn't freeze. Inexpensive hummingbird feeders can be purchased or made at home for those that don't have the time or the green thumb to create a garden with plants to attract hummingbirds. For best results, pick a red feeder and fill it with sugar water, a solution of 1/4 cup sugar to 1 cup of water. Mix well and change the solution often. If it gets cloudy, you waited too long and should fully clean out the feeder. Cloudiness indicates fermentation and the production of toxic alcohol, which can be very hazardous to hummingbirds. Each autumn, hummingbird feeders can attract hummers from near and far. Their population numbers are enhanced with young of the year, and the northern hummers will visit feeders along their migration corridors. Their aggressive nature at feeders creates amazing battles of hummingbird mayhem, which only enhances our appreciation of these lightweight flying dynamos. Lastly, when I was growing up, there was a myth that during migration, hummingbirds could hitch a ride on the backs of Canada geese. It seemed the only plausible explanation of hummingbirds traversing the Gulf of Mexico each spring and autumn. Although rich in romanticism that one species could benefit the needs of another, this myth has been debunked. Yet, it is another marvel of nature that these tiny birds that weigh as much as a nickel could provide such stamina for distant travels. And that's our phenology for ruby-throated hummingbirds for today.
That really makes me nostalgic for the hummingbird feeders we used to have in our windows in our own old house. They were stuck to the windows. The real problem was keeping up with the sugar water that we had to take out to them. This is something that we've missed since we moved to our apartment. They don't think they like to come up to this third floor. I guess the garden was close enough that they felt at home there. Do you feed hummingbirds, Gina?
Yes, I do, except right now I haven't been keeping up very well with the birds and the squirrels that keep draining all the feeders. But I have been keeping them watered. With my move, I've been trying to keep boxing things and haven't been able to keep up.
Yeah, well, with the hummingbirds, it's often just trying to keep up with them. They really go through a lot of that sugar water every day, and you have to keep feeding them or they're not going to stick around. One of the other things that I miss from our old house is the campanile. And we had a little clip from the campanile. Could we just start that and then fade it out? Been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts today, Gina McAndrews and Susan Franson. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Mike Baronic, and infectious disease physician Dr. Megan
Sironovich,
Jay Wilson, and Pat Schlarbaum.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At noon, the Ames Public Library will present Reading Radio Live. You can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information from our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was A Lark in the Clean Air, performed by the McGill-McHale Trio from the album Portraits, and A Lark in the Morning from a suite of English folk songs performed by Tin Shi Tan on the ISU Carillon.
And Rubber Ducky by Sesame Street.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. or you can contact us through our website at khoifm.org. That's also all you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or to renew your membership. Just hit the yellow donate, become a member button, and you can do so. If you enjoyed the show, please tell all your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.